cliffcentral.com.
So increasingly, humanity finds itself drowning in information. We are choking in a deluge of data. We are increasingly suffering from bandwidth anxiety between our Twitter feeds and Instagram feeds and Facebook feeds. Most people talk about the fact that now we live in the attention economy. Attention is the new limited resource. Attention is the new oil. If you don't have ADD today, you're not paying attention. This is the question on everybody's minds. How do we curate what we pay attention to? How do we push aside the noise and focus on what's important? Stuart Brand used to say, science is the only news. The rest is the same he says and she says that you see in the media. And so, if I were to be talking to entrepreneurs, if I was talking to heads of companies, I would tell them, pay attention to exponentials. Pay attention to disruptive technologies. Pay attention to the progress in artificial intelligence, biotechnology, nanotechnology, right? The big three, GNR, genetics, nanotechnology, and robotics. These are the forces that are upending the world. These are the new trillion-dollar industries that are going to emerge out of no place. Think exponentially, pay attention to disruptive technology.
Hey, welcome to the Futurology Show. Yes, think exponentially. And pay attention to disruptive technology. It was so awesome to be at Singularity.
Oh, I'm still wet.
It's still okay.
That's not a sight I have on heaven.
Yeah. It was going so well, right? We had like 5 seconds of uninterrupted, like crazy.
Can we restart this?
No, I've just spilled the water on myself.
Yes. What did you think of Singularity University Summit?
Yep, still wet.
Mike Cowan.
Yeah, look, it was mind-blowing. I mean, these guys were fantastic. We've got some interesting guys coming up today. Hey?
We do, yes. We've got Ramez Naam talking about energy. We've got Ryan Noach.
Local is Lacquer.
Local, yeah, from Discovery, talking about health and what they're doing. Yeah. MTN was a partner in Singularity, and we spoke to Stephen Van Coller. And at the end, we spoke about digital biology with Mr. Raymond McCauley, not Pastor Ray McCauley, but Raymond McCauley of Singularity University.
Wow. Well, he did preach, didn't he?
He preached about digital biology, yeah. I was converted, I must say. That was amazing stuff, man. And if you're looking for some amazingness to listen to over the next hour, welcome to the Futurology Show.
For
we
sure.
are going to be talking and going back at some of the interviews we did at Singularity and meeting some amazing people.
It's so good to have you back from Amsterdam, Paul.
Thank you.
It is.
I like it here. Yeah. It's cheaper. The little rand sign in front of the currency is always more welcoming.
I agree. Red light district.
Yeah. Let's move swiftly on. So who's the first lineup here?
So, talking about energy and where the best places to spend it, make it, consume it, and use it, and all the rest, is Mr. Ramez Naam.
Brought to you by Eskom.
Not.
But they really actually should be listening to this because they're in trouble.
Mm. Oh, yeah, for
Let's
sure.
Let's put it that way.
And, there's going to be a bunch of people taking up the opportunity to fix this problem. So, here's Ramez Naam from Singularity University Summit, and it was a great interview. Hope you enjoyed.
It's fantastic to be at Singularity University
Loving
Summit.
It.
I mean, our minds have been completely blown away.
Oh, yeah. And then put back together and blown again.
I mean, it just doesn't end, does it, Brett?
No, it's great.
I'm really excited to have in studio with us Ramez Naam. I mean, your presentation, I think, had the whole of South African Twitter sphere exploding with energy.
Thanks so much, Brett. It's great to be here.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and the show, because your topic about exponential energy was mind-boggling.
Thanks. I'm a futurist myself. I'm ex-Microsoft. I'm a software guy. Mm. But for the last 7-8 years, I've really focused on energy and on the plunging cost of solar and wind and batteries and what that means for the world.
I mean, plunging, it's probably the best example I've seen of it. You know, you talked about a 270-fold decrease. Was that the right number?
Something like that. 1977, it cost $77 for 1 watt of solar panel. Mm. And today, you can buy that for 30 cents.
That is,
so it's incredible.
That is incredible. So, I mean, that's everybody's talking about exponential growth in technology, but that's the exponential price, competitive pricing?
That's right. It's the exponential price decline of technology.
And things don't need to get better. They just need to get cheaper so that people have more access.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So actually, that's a very good point. I keep thinking solar technology, especially, it's advancing. But I believe that the solar, I can't remember what the cells are called. Cells are literally maybe increasing in technology slightly, but it's actually purely price point move, right?
That's right. The photovoltaics themselves are better. They're about 21% efficiency. Mm. What fraction of sunlight they turn into electricity. And that goes up by about a point every 2 years. But the main improvement is in the manufacturing process of them. That uses less energy, they're thinner, they recycle more. And so that has brought the cost down tremendously.
So it's incredible. I mean, we're always optimizing. We're talking about exponential growth and disruption. But there's this global understanding of opportunity spaces where these types of energies are best used. You had a great example of the sun exposure in Germany versus the sun exposure in just one small part of South Africa.
Yeah.
And it's where you put these as well that actually yields the most output.
That's right. South Africa gets twice as much sun as Germany does. And Germany was the world's leader in solar until about 2015 or so. So one small corner of the northwest of South Africa gets as much sunlight as the entire nation of Germany. And just, it's stunning.
That's phenomenal.
Really. So just 1% of the land there would power the entire nation.
So in South Africa, we're always talking about how do we be globally competitive. I mean, if you look at where we make most of our money, it's from tourism, it's from minerals that we mine, gold, diamonds, those kind of things. But those are limited resources. Is this the opportunity for sun-filled or energy-filled nations to be able to export energy?
Absolutely. And you can export it directly, or you can do what, say, Iceland does. Iceland has very cheap energy from geothermal, and so Iceland uses that to manufacture. Iceland uses that to process aluminum. And so South Africa could be an exporter using this cheap energy to manufacture goods.
So manufacturing energy cost-effectively and being able to convert it into manufacturing, I guess that's a huge opportunity when you're mining bitcoins or you're mining Ethereum coins, because surely that's the conversion of energy into dollars.
We do see that people who mine cryptocurrency effectively place themselves near cheap energy sources.
Yep,
so you often find them near hydroelectric dams, for instance, because that's cheap 24/7 electricity. And I think there is an opportunity for cheap solar combined with coin mining.
And I believe, Brett, you've been mining Ethereum recently.
Yeah,
and
we've
a ton of money on it, right?
Well, we had a couple of extra gaming servers lying around, so we figured better use to plug them in and let them do something. And we are closely monitoring the power consumption versus the earnings.
How's it going?
We're coming out up, which is good. Yeah. So, but that's when the human greed factor kicks in. You're like, how many more of these can we do? And like, can we buy more graphic cards? And then where do we do it? And then eventually your brain goes a little bit crazy, because at some point it does come back to the sustainable energy required.
That's right.
To actually make it profitable.
That's right. But you could also heat your home with your mining.
Yes.
Systems.
And where are they doing that? They're doing that in Amsterdam?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, but so in a European country, they're actually starting to do some of the plumbing goes through the server units, the data center, and actually they don't have a geyser because they just run it through the CPUs over the processors.
I did notice that you did have a whole lot of property papers for Northern Cape. Hint, hint.
Solar panel. Yeah.
Excellent.
But your bio is really, really interesting. Not only is your talk very interesting, but your bio explains a very interesting human who has ridden his bicycle down the coast of Vietnam. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true.
And you've climbed mountains and gone down crevasses.
Yes.
So just tell us a little bit about you and you do these things.
I'm a science fiction writer also. Okay. It's a lot of what I do.
Yeah, you got 4 books.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, a number of sci-fi novels. Nexus is my first novel. I like to live a life of adventure. I mean, who doesn't? If you have
Brilliant.
The chance. So each of those, it's not that I'm riding my bicycle down the coast of Vietnam every day.
Yeah.
I did that once. It was wonderful.
Thank you for stopping
absolutely.
And pulling over for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So you want to live a life that is full of rich experiences.
Yeah, yeah.
Experiences matter more than possessions for your happiness.
Yeah, yeah.
And you want to live a life where you feel that you're having some positive impact on other people. That's my overall view.
That is fantastic.
I absolutely love it.
I subscribe very much to that way of thinking. Energy spent doing optimistic and amazing things with great output,
yeah,
is definitely worth doing.
Yeah, so I hear the Twitter sphere in South Africa is a bit lit up by my talk, and that's great. I mean, that's what makes me happy. It's like, okay, you made some change in the world, and hopefully this show that we're doing today here will too.
Fantastic, thanks.
I guess I just want to cover one last part, and it was very, very important, and I'm going to throw it forward a bit, and it seems to lie in storage of energy.
Yes.
Can you go into that a bit for our guests?
Because
a lot of stuff's happening there, so, especially thinking forward.
So the sun shines and it sets, right? Now, the peak of electricity demand is usually during the day when the sun is shining, but you want electricity at night. The wind tends to kick in more at night and more in winter, and it helps. But you really, ultimately, you have to have some way to store the sunshine or the wind power to use when you want it and to fill in. And that has been incredibly expensive in the past, but it's plunging in price. The price of batteries over the last 20 years has dropped about 20-fold.
And wow.
Just since 2010, they've gone down about 5x in price. So they're getting to the point, they're close to the point, where we can really use them to store all of this incredible amount of solar energy that South Africa can generate.
Duracell, did you hear that?
Well, I actually am called the Duracell bunny at some of the places I go to because I don't
surprised.
Just stop. But I mean, at some point, humans are a battery. Is that not a look to the future where we actually start storing some of the energy we can make ourselves?
It sounds like we're talking about the Matrix.
Yeah. But why not? If they've dreamt it once, we can dream it again.
Yeah, I mean, well, we store chemical energy. We eat food. That's an energy source. We make ATP. It's an energy source. So I would personally love, people can't see me, but I have a slightly thicker midsection than I'd like. So I'd be happy to like...
You look very thin to me.
Well, thanks so much. Okay. I'd be happy to like just plug in my phone and have it charge and burn a little excess fat.
So yes.
I'm looking, I'd patent that if I had any clue how to actually do it.
That's brilliant. I think it was it Carlo's talk or your talk where he was talking about the bicycle versus the car and how the bicycle takes fat and turns it into energy and how the car takes energy and turns it into fat.
That was Carlo, but yes.
So if you're able to do that in the future, maybe we are the ultimate battery. Who knows?
Maybe so.
But thank you so much for the time today. We look forward to an opportunity.
Thank you, Brett. Great to be here.
Thank you very much. All the best.
That's it. I promise you I'm buying myself some solar panels. I'm done.
You know what? I'm going to wait another 2 years because by the time 2 years comes around, I'll be able to cover 10 times the amount for the same price.
No, Mike, I'm just looking at you like a laggard. I wanted to say maggard.
By the time 10 years has gone past and you've wasted all of your money buying some municipal infrastructure power, you won't have anything left.
You won't. So. But you know what? Eskom has got a lot to wake up on. We want to build this nuclear crap. I mean, it's just insane.
Yeah.
I mean, the coal power plants, this is insane.
We have the most exposure to sunlight in possibly the world,
arguably the world,
and that we're not using it. And yet, it's in our backyard, and the price of photovoltaic solar is going down. And yet, there are still people that have no power infrastructure in this country.
And it's not hard.
It breaks my brain. Yeah. Come, guys, let's pay attention to where the needs are and let's start solving some problems.
Absolutely.
Well, luckily, if your brain is broken,
yes,
our next guest
can fix
it. Is all about fixing brains, right?
Yes.
Well, I guess, is he fixing brains?
He's fixing the entire body.
The entire body.
Yes.
And that's Ryan Noach, the deputy CEO of Discovery.
Yeah. It's all on you, Ryan. You got to fix the bodies. No pressure.
Did you have as much of a man crush on Ryan as you did on Craig Nozzle?
I have to admit, Craig's still top of my pile.
Top of your pile, man.
Craig, I'm wearing your shoes today.
Yeah. You are, hey? Yeah. I like your shoes.
Are you walking the talk? I have been.
I have been.
So I managed to get my free vitality rewards. I got some smoothies and some coffees because of all the walking I did.
OMG.
So I took my shoes that Dr. Craig gave us, and I went to the International Broadcast Conference in Amsterdam, and I walked an average of almost 12 kilometers a day.
Wow.
Boom.
Thank God he gave you good shoes.
It was ridiculous. Yeah. That's. I was thinking that every step.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
Thank you, Dr. Craig. It's well worth it. And those Vitality Rewards are a great treat. When you sync your health app on your phone, you're like, hey, this is pretty cool. And then all of a sudden, free smoothie, free coffee. I'm like, boom, this is what I need to keep walking.
But it does work. I mean,
it does work.
Yeah, you do lose weight as well. But this is not an advert for Discovery.
No, but it does work well. But that's a nice thing. The whole point of it is that this is people locally that are doing. And absolutely, they're doing well. And it's about incentivizing not only the interaction through technology, absolutely, but also a better life and a better way of living and ultimately our health.
For sure. Yes.
So here's Mr. Ryan Noach. Enjoy.
Enjoy.
Absolutely having a blast at Singularity University. It's Brett Sinclair here. We're really fortunate to have Ryan Noach with us. He's the Deputy Chief Executive Officer of Discovery. What a legend. You were up on the MedTech Fireside Chat with Raymond McCauley. And by the way, that is not the South African Raymond McCauley. He's all about flirting with genetics,
and
isn't
digital,
he?
Digital biology.
And digital biology.
Yeah,
and
so
all
he's
that
part
kind
of the Singularity
stuff.
University faculty.
Yeah, that's
talking
right.
Talking specifically about that digital biology.
So welcome great to the show.
Thanks so much.
We're really excited to have you. Tell us a little bit about your passion around the medtech space.
Yeah, no, it's really great to be here. I should say up front that actually Raymond McCauley is the legend in the space. The only people who call me a legend are my mates when we down some beers, right?
I don't know. You kind of arch on there. We're flipping impressed.
I'm a clinician. I'm a doctor by profession, although I don't really know what to do with a patient anymore. Work at Discovery where really I found meaning and incredible challenges. I'm passionate about digital healthcare, yeah, and the technology and medtech developments around digital healthcare are changing the way care is being delivered. Mm. We live in a society globally where doctors are in charge and patients are inferior.
Mm,
and
true,
certainly yeah, for our parents and our grandparents, if they were told to take the little pink pill, they just took it. They didn't want to know why or what it was or what it did or what was wrong with them.
It's
they
quite
just
scary,
it.
You think about it.
It's
right?
Wrong. It's yeah, wrong.
The error so, of the specialist.
Yeah,
well, the point is that consumers, people, patients should be central to the healthcare system. They should be fully informed. They should have the right to ask for multiple opinions. They should completely understand what they're doing and what their treatment plan is. And technology, and particularly digital platforms, wearable sensors, genetic information, artificial intelligence, is putting that at the fingertips of the consumers through your mobile phone and through other channels. And it's really changing the game.
So I suppose, I mean, you're talking a lot about experience, by the sounds of it. You're redefining the doctor-patient experience purely through technology. And it's very much like what banks are trying to do by getting people away from the branches, right? But you're doing this at scale with MedTech.
Yeah, no, we're way past getting away from the branches.
You guys are lucky, right?
I mean, I don't think I've been into a bank branch in 25 years.
But it's a wonderful experience, surely.
So I should say this. One of the really exciting developments is we're about to launch to every Discovery member a connected platform called Dr. Connect. And what it does is it allows you to ask consumer health-related questions of an artificial intelligence engine. That engine has got 5.4 billion questions and answers behind it and has been trained over time.
Yeah, because it does take a while to train. Everyone thinks, you just whip it in and off you go.
It takes a long time.
Yeah.
And if the artificial intelligence engine can't answer you, you can very easily ask a doctor a generic question across the platform. Mm. And if the doctor can't answer you, you can very easily do a consultation with the doctor on the platform, off your mobile phone or your web-enabled computer. The one requirement in South Africa is the law requires that if you're going to do that consultation with a doctor, that it be your own doctor. And so we'll only be able to connect you to your own doctor.
That's quite an interesting, because your own doctor is just someone you might have randomly reached out to recently
whoever
in
was
your
closest
area,
on
whoever
geolocation. Was,
right? Well, we define it as somebody that you have had a consultation with in the last 12 months.
Okay.
So anybody who you've seen in the last 12 months, a specialist or a family practitioner.
Interesting requirement.
I suppose it protects the liability of the doctor to make sure that the doctor really understands your clinical condition. Okay. Many countries have moved on. Yeah. Certainly in the U.S. today, virtual consultations, there were 100 million of them in 2016, according to a McKinsey report. Wow. And you can do a virtual consultation with any doctor, whether you know them or not. But the law is the law, and so we will connect you to your doctor, and seamlessly you can talk to your doctor over the mobile. The doctor will capture a clinical record of that. He'll have all your clinical information available and can support you.
So
The idea of this connected information world that we live in, patients are going to find out about what they want to find out about themselves through Google. And we get terms like Google chondriac coming up and people coming up with the worst information possible about how they're going to live or die in the next coming weeks. But it's great that you guys are putting together a platform that actually focuses the right questions to the right places to hopefully have more informed people. Was that sort of a big part of it? Are you seeing the, sort of that transformation between guys just finding any information from anywhere and the adoption of something like this?
Yeah. It doesn't come out of us seeing many problems with that. Mm. Of course, clinicians report all the time how problematic this is. Let me give you a very short story as an example. Mm. A patient goes to see a neurologist. Neurologist says, you've got this, this, and this condition. This is a real story. My ex-wife is a neurologist. You've got this, this, and this condition, and unfortunately, we've got to treat it this way, and there isn't better treatment available. Second consultation, patient comes along and says, look, here's a study I found on the internet, and you can treat it with this fancy serum that nobody's ever heard anything about. And when you dig deep into the study, 12 patients in some remote corner of France who were treated with some serum, there's not proper evidence, there's not a statistically relevant study, and so on and so on. Mm-hmm. That's the danger.
Yeah.
And clinicians are seeing that regularly. The point about a platform is it needs to provide reliable information and contextually relevant.
Yeah.
And the best way to do that is to know something about you.
Yeah.
So, for example, at Discovery, we have created a personal health record for each of our members. It's available on your Discovery app.
And I think the US would kill for something like that, right? To track the health record of an individual. It's so disparate.
Yeah, look, in the US, 52% of doctors use health records now.
Oh, do they?
Okay. Electronic so health record systems, yeah. Jeez. They've just crossed the 50% mark.
Okay.
So once we have your personal health record, we connect it with the artificial intelligence information. Mm-hmm. We can hopefully give you a relatively intuitive response.
I guess what I'm really excited about that is you can now reach these massive platforms, like embed the bot into a messenger, into WhatsApp, and you could probably scale it even further into whatever regions you want to go into, right?
Multi-channel, multi-presence. And you know, it should be everywhere, ultimately. So how does the world look different?
Mm. Yeah.
Well, we think much less face-to-face consultations, much more virtual consultations, much more informed consumers, accessing reliable information, contextually relevant. So it looks different. It's not going to happen tomorrow, but it will hopefully will materialize.
That's excellent. Well, thanks for joining us today. I know that you're a busy man and you're going building amazing things, and we look forward to what Discovery you're going to give us in the future. Quick wrap up. Singularity University, good, bad, otherwise, coming back next year?
This is my second engagement. I spoke at the local chapter first and at this conference. Absolutely phenomenal speakers, world leaders. Raymond McCauley, who I've just had the privilege of chatting to, really one of the world's pioneers in biotech. And so just the caliber of the people and the content, fantastic, and you know, really presented in a beautiful way.
Excellent. Well, thanks
ladies
for joining
and gentlemen,
us.
Yeah, thank you very much. Ryan Noach, Deputy Chief Executive Officer of Discovery Health. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cool. Cheers.
Cool. How was that, guys?
It was good. You weren't there that time. So.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't, but I did listen.
Yeah? But it's really cool to see that they're doing something in South Africa. I mean, it's in this summit filled with international people all talking about big, big global challenges. It's nice that we're addressing some of these global challenges around health and access to the right medicines and access to just great living, better living.
Absolutely.
I must admit, Ryan's a crazy, crazy busy guy.
Oh, yeah.
And like the whole way through, you could see he was just bursting to go into his next million meetings. So I'm really chuffed that we managed to get some of your time.
Okay.
No, it was very good.
That was good.
And another person that we had, also local as Lekker, is Stephen Van Coller from MTN. Was also able to come through and chat to us, and also as a strategic partner of the Singularity Summit
this
year.
I missed him. You see, like, keep missing him. Well, I just missed him at Barclays.
Okay.
And now he's joined MTN and came and interviewed with you guys, and I missed him again. That's so unfair.
I tell you what I'll reach out to Stephen and ask him to come and join us, because I think we're talking about Singularity and we're talking about this great exponential, but Stephen's a guy in the corporate world. And he's obviously very, very inspired by this, as you know, you'll hear in the chat coming up. I'm going to ask him to come and join us for a full hour, so we can actually understand how do you do exponential. Wow. How do you do singularity? So I'll reach out to Stephen, because he did say he would come and join us for an hour. So yeah, but he's also super busy.
It was a great interview we had with him as well. We spoke about not only singularity and how their involvement was in singularity, but also how the telco infrastructure is actually there to make space for these types of exponential technologies to work.
Yeah.
And that's hugely important as well. I mean, they get bashed quite a lot with data and all the way end consumers are operating with stuff. But without the backbone, without the infrastructure that's there to 100%. Support it,
there's no singularity.
There's no connectivity.
There is no connectivity.
So here's Mr. Stephen Koller again from the Singularity Summit in Johannesburg that we had earlier this year, a couple of months ago, 2 months ago now.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. So here's Stephen Koller from Singularity.
So we're still at the Singularity U Summit in South Africa, and we are enjoying our time here. Mike, are you having a great time so far?
I love it. Fantastic. Great speakers, very entertaining, very insightful, and expanding the mind.
And it's wonderful how everybody just has such a firm grasp of the topic that they are talking about. It's really great to chat to these people and to learn so much more about the depths of knowledge that's coming from all over the world to this great summit we're having here.
Well, I think so, and thanks to MTN. And we've got Stephen van Koller in here with us.
Yes, for sure. So Stephen van Koller, the VP of Digital Services, Data Analytics and Business Development at MTN. Thanks for your time to join us on Futurology Show.
Pleasure. I mean, I'm very excited to be here. As you know, in my last job, we had a sort of trial summit, and we had a very close session with only our top clients, and it went down extremely well. And so we've been trying to just, you know, personally and with man-made media actually to get them back. And the way we've managed to focus it, you know, we just feel that as an African summit, MTN, you know, having 250 million customers across Africa, this is really something that we have to get involved in. We've got to get technology out there. We've got innovation out there. Mm. And, you know, it sounds like a good CSR a story, but really what it's about is if you can bring this innovation and you can create GDP growth, we are 100% correlated to GDP growth.
Yeah.
So that's really what we're actually driving at. And, you know, our slogan is to make our, you know, customers' lives a whole lot brighter and, you know, just bringing innovation into
And that's not talking about the cell phone screen. Make it brighter.
Well, yellow's pretty bright.
So. It is pretty bright. But you play a very important role in Africa. I mean, just the very nature of your business, it's about data, it's about connectivity. And without that, we wouldn't actually be able to do any of these amazing things. And these exponential ideas and thinking that has been shared today would not be possible. So, you know, as a group, I think it's fantastic that you've actually sponsored this and made the effort to get these guys out here, because it's been a phenomenal day.
No, thank you very much. We're also very excited about it.
Go for it.
Sorry. MTN is doing a wonderful amount of things in the digital space, especially in the innovation space, and you guys partnered up with the Gartner Symposium and the Aspiring Innovators Awards from that perspective. You also do the MTN App of the Year. And there's great stuff happening in terms of how you're nurturing the new business coming up through South African industry. How is that going from an MTN perspective? And is there more on the horizon of things that MTN are going to get involved in the future?
Yeah, if you have a look at the Bright strategy that our CEO announced last week, the growth, but the G of Bright is growth through data and digital.
Yeah.
And the real driver behind that is in the smartphone world, you've got a SIM and you can only do a call through that SIM. In a feature phone world. In a smartphone world is when you're mobile, maybe you're on the SIM. When you're at home, you're on fiber. Or if you're at work, you're on someone else's Wi-Fi. So the problem is you don't have 100% control over the customer. So the beauty, I suppose, of this digital revolution is putting the foot back on the consumer.
Yeah.
And so what we need to do is, as we migrate our customers, and we've only got about 27% of the 250 million on a smartphone today, but that's changing rapidly. We think in 3 years' time that's going to be 60%. And so we got
That's incredible.
It is incredible. In I think it's Ivory Coast this year, just in 6 months, it's gone from 13% to 26%. And that's partly with it coming down, partly because we're pushing it as well, because as the voice charges come down, as people start using voice OTT, we need to drive data usage up because it's expensive to roll out our data, so you can't have low volumes. What's really interesting is that if we want to keep you in our ecosystem, we need to provide services that you're interested in. It's like the shopping mall. If you build a shopping mall and you put one shop in it, people don't go there. Yeah, or if you put great shops in it and never change it, people eventually get bored of it and don't go. Yeah. So,
exactly.
So this whole digital services bit is very important that you get the right services to drive data usage. Yeah. And then you get the right network strategy, which we've got this dual data strategy that he talks about, the sort of high speed LTE in the cities and the very thin but broad coverage of 3G data in the rural areas. And then you have to get your mobile phone strategy right. It's no good putting Apple iPhones into Uganda. It's just too expensive. So there's a whole, actually quite scientific around it. And so managing that's quite important.
No, it's awesome. That's the level of it. I mean, most people will just pick up their phone and probably blame you from time to time if a call drops. But historically, that's sort of where MTN was positioned. They're very much a consumer-driven focused business where we're going to connect people.
Yeah, it was the David and Goliath.
Yeah, and which one's David, which one's Goliath? And it's the side of it.
But when MTN started, it was David, and it took on the Goliath. Yeah. It was a great story.
Yeah.
Fantastic story.
But the consumer-driven thing, I mean, we talk about disruption at the Singularity U. We're speaking about exponential growth. I mean, there's talk of voice services being disrupted very much so by data services these days, where data is very much overriding. So you guys have had to see that sort of shift in user acceptance of things. And you've even gone into fixed line. You've gone into business packaging. There's great stuff that MTN have done. Can you share a little bit more about some of the journey or some of the experiences you've seen coming out of that?
Yeah, there's a few things driving it. And this is also, going back to last week's half-year presentation. The work we've done is that if you have a look at the consumer, the market across our markets, so the 100% market, voice will drop by about 80 billion rand over the next 3 years.
Sure.
Data usage will go up about 80 billion rand.
Okay.
And digital services will go up about 80 billion rand. So,
what do you mean digital services? Sorry, Stephen, I interrupted.
So content, video, music, financial services, anything that gets consumed over an internet connection.
And it's owned by MTN or enabled by MTN?
Well, some of it, yeah.
Largely enabled because I don't want to become a bank. Okay. I want to enable banking, but I don't want to be the bank. Yes. I'm not going to...
But it's driving
data. Exactly right. I'm not going to create videos and stuff. Mm. I'll go and get them from, whoever.
So the MVNO space, as you've discussed now, I mean, it very much is that context within which we exist in this digital landscape that we find ourselves.
Mm. So the way I look at it is...
And you mentioned it with the malls now as well.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, the actual physical network is like a highway.
Yeah.
Okay. And if you build a highway from Joburg to Durban, you can leave it with potholes, but then people will find an alternative route. 100%. So you want it to be the best. And that's what MTN's really, a strive to do. The second thing you then have to do is, if you had a feature phone, you couldn't get off the highway because you were locked into the SIM.
Yeah.
But now with a smartphone, you actually can get off the highway.
Yeah.
So if you're driving down the highway and you say, I need some petrol, if I don't put a petrol station at the right place on the highway, what do? You go off into the nearest town, you go and you buy your petrol there. It's off my highway, so I don't get rental or we don't get any fees. Yeah. You then see a nice little restaurant, you still have something to eat, and you see, there's a nice little scenic route, and you go off down the scenic route, you join my road 200 kilometers down the road. I've just lost a massive opportunity.
Yes.
So the digital side of it is really building those off-ramps and the infrastructure to make sure there's services so that while you're driving on my highway,
you're enjoying that experience.
You can do everything you want to do.
Okay.
And that's really what you're trying to build over time. And obviously that takes time.
So coming back to Singularity U, that we're having a great experience here, just from a personal perspective, what's really inspiring you about the conversations that are happening and what inspires you about the future?
What inspires me about the...
Sorry, let's start again.
What inspires me about the future was something that happened to me actually at Davos about four years ago. I was really, really worried about education in South Africa. And I thought, how on earth are we going to solve this problem?
100%.
Because if we don't solve education, everything else doesn't.
It really doesn't.
Doesn't work. And so I decided to follow the track of digital education. And it was very interesting. I walked into a presentation. There was like 400 people there. Bill Gates on the stage. And they call up this 11-year-old girl from Pakistan or Afghanistan or somewhere. She had come second in a engineering degree of sorts out of MIT that was done over the
remotely, yeah.
Yeah, but over the air, you know, over the internet. And they didn't know she was 11.
Oh, wow.
When she was doing it, because it was all just, you know,
and
remote.
It's an MIT course.
It's an MIT course. Yeah, so she listened
in. Not school level.
Not school level. She listened in. She went over, you know, on her internet connection. She passed this thing. They found out she was 11. They've brought her there. But she walks up onto the stage, and the MC says, "So how does it feel to meet Bill Gates?" And she says, "Bill who?" But the reality is suddenly the penny dropped that if we really use this asset we've got, we can fundamentally change education at a very low cost. And 100%. That's really what Cesar was getting at, is you don't have to go through this very stifling, straitjacket curriculum.
Quite right.
You can allow people to explore stuff. And that. And we sing in business today. There's another, you know, funny story. When I was a youngster, just starting out in banking, I went to one of our parastatals, and I walked in, and I had a meeting. As I walked out, I said, to the guy, you know, "Jelani, this is just a massive place. How many people work here?" And he said to me, "About 30%. and the funny story of that is, if in today's world where you've got access to information and internet, you know, and we on our iPhones have got more information than Bill Clinton had when he was president, is you cannot give people a job description.
No.
Because all you're doing is you're only getting 40% from them.
Yep.
So you pay them 100%, but they only work 40%.
Yep. Yeah.
So you've got to change the way you interact with your staff. You've got to create vertical slice committees, not horizontal slice committees.
Yeah.
You've got to allow people to do task-based work. You're no longer the boss, you're just a mentor because people are doing work for lots of different people.
Absolutely.
And then you can get 100% and you get the productivity.
And the best.
And it's ditto for education. I mean, that a presentation by Dr. Vivian Ming, that for me is very inspiring. And some of the stuff I've actually seen, there's a maths project somewhere out in Mpumalanga where this guy's collected maths test results from 10 years, and he can tell you which bits of maths you don't understand. And so they can start focusing on the bits you don't understand.
Yeah.
And so suddenly you get this equality in education.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean you've got to go to the top schools or the whatever. Everyone can get an equal education. And that, if you think about it, in Africa specifically, but in the world in a whole, this inequality is what's driving all the attrition, 100%. All the issues that we've got. And if we can get rid of that, you know, you don't all have to be Bill Gates. You don't all have to be the CEO. But you want to have the choice to decide whether you want to have a go at being the CEO or not.
100%.
And if you don't have choice, that's when all the problems start.
Quite agree.
That's fantastic. Stephen Collar from MTN, the strategic partner of the Singularity University Summit, thank you so much for your time today. And look forward to seeing you in the rest of the summit.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Well, there you go. That was Stephen from Collar. Brett, you asked him some hard questions. You tried to put him in a corner a bit there, didn't you?
I did before the microphones were on as well. There was a little minor question around hashtag Artemis4, but
that's
cheeky, eh?
It was quite funny because he kind of looked at Brett and said,
"We're not talking about that today,
and it's not my department." You know, it's so you can ask as much as you want, but I'm really not even going to engage with you on that. But he was quite honest about that. They have to look at that,
and the truth is as well that the infrastructure that they do put down is really important, and it actually is enabling a lot of connectivity to make these technologies work, which
is important.
Yeah, well done. Keep doing it.
100%.
So, I mean, talking about hashtags and praising biology, hashtag biology must not fall.
Yeah, no, I gave up biology.
I'm trying to go somewhere here with this, you know, with Raymond McCauley. I've got a play on it, right?
I worked that up, but I gave up biology a long time ago. Yeah. Was that a mistake, Brett?
No.
No, it was totally there.
One thing that I find Okay. You two don't. We should separate you.
Yeah, you should.
The osmosis between you two is already happening.
Ooh, there we go.
Check. But we speak so much about the future and the new age or the new industrial revolution and how technology is changing things. So I don't know how many people are actually paying attention to our own biology. And they talk about the three big things: genetics, nanotechnology, and robotics. But genetics and nanotechnology are very much invasive of our own biologies. And I watched the movie Ghost in the Shell recently.
Ooh.
And it's all about
I see that.
Yeah, you must check it out. So it's very much linked into how that can work. But Raymond McCauley,
the lady is like just
it's just a brain
right?
Plugged into a
yes,
big machine. Yes,
I have seen it.
Yeah. And how you can do these cyber enhancements of your
bodies. 2.0.
Human 5.0.
Yeah.
And going. And it's amazing. But the big question that Raymond brought up was more around the ethics of whether or not we should do these things, and if we could do these things, and if we can get to a point where we can start genetically engineering our children to be better children.
Well,
what does it mean for us?
Well, he goes a step further, right? I mean, during his show, he had one of those DNA samplers, and he's wandering around the audience kind of as though he was on Tinder. Well, let's swipe left and get a test on your DNA. No, thank you. Not quite right. Hold on. We've got some DNA here.
What
right?
was that? That was CRISPR, hey? So CRISPR. The CRISPR genome sequencing tool with Tinder.
In
the
handheld.
Like a little API. You don't need to swipe left anymore. You just need to like prick your finger.
It's quite scary. I mean, it's the end of privacy there. You go on a date and you know, I mean, it's the end of privacy.
But that's the big question as well. There's so much ethics around it. Like, what is it ethically sustainable?
Absolutely.
From a societal standpoint? What is it from a privacy standpoint? Yeah. What does it all mean? What does it all mean?
It's going to change how we are as a society.
Yeah. Well, before we let you philosophize around the ethics, because you are the digital philosopher, let's jump into the chat.
Yeah, no, for sure. And Raymond says it better than the three of us can. So let's get to that interview with Mr. Raymond McCauley around digital biology at Singularity Summit.
You're still with the Futurology Show right here at the Singularity University Summit in Johannesburg. And Justin, it's just you and me. You've exchanged one Brett for the other.
Jeez, like, I thought I was getting rid of the Bretts.
Rotating doors, revolving doors for you today, man. Can you keep up with all this change?
No, not at this time of the afternoon.
No, that's good. It's been a really, really exciting day. A lot of information overload and a lot of great things happening. But we've got one of the greatest guest that I heard today, and we've got Mr. Raymond McCauley. No association to Mr. Ray McCauley of Rhema Church in South Africa?
Not at all.
Not at all.
Zero.
As you can hear straight away. And Raymond, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Excellent. And your talk was all about digital biology, and you had some amazing things. I tried to keep up making notes, but we spoke about some genome sequencing, some reprogramming medicine, and some engineering of humans, and a whole bunch of stuff. But one of the big things that happened towards the end of your talk was the ethics question.
Yeah.
Just because we can doesn't mean we necessarily should. But before we get into that, that's the taster of where we're going. Tell us about who you are, what you do, and what you think of Singularity.
Well, so I'm just this guy from Texas, and I grew up on a ranch, trained as a computer scientist and electrical engineer, wanted to be an astronaut when I grew up, ended up working for the government for years and years and years and got really bored with that, and then went back to school and became a biophysicist, a molecular biologist, studied nanotechnology, and kind of saw where some of these new things were coming. Did it maybe a little earlier. I was in the late 90s whenever I made this big career shift. And since then, it's been my privilege to work on some amazing teams with startups and scientific institutions. I got to help put together the technology that does next generation genome sequencing. And I've worked in systems biology, cancer sequencing. I've done projects for NASA on closed environment life support systems and helped start Singularity University about 10 years ago.
Wow.
So, and that's been so fantastic. Anytime I get to be in a room with the people who make that up, it's just such a great ride.
Well, then, thank you very much for starting Singularity University, because this is my first exposure to it, and I must say I am absolutely blown away, and I'm so grateful to know that something like this exists on the planet.
We sure do have a good time with it. It's whenever I was a kid, we'll say one more thing. I love the movie Buckaroo Banzai.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah? Nope.
No. Oh, so it's about a scientist who's also a neurosurgeon and a rock star.
Awesome. Oh, wow. Great combination.
Yeah. And Singularity University kind of makes that come true. You walk into a room, everybody there is an astronaut and a pilot and a doctor, and but they're all really down to earth. They're just these nice guys and gals, and so it's a lot of fun to do what we do.
It really is, sorry, Justin, it really is a coming together of great minds, and also a bringing down of walls between a lot of faculties and stuff that exist sometimes in isolation. And I think the thing that I've really loved over the last little while is just seeing how we can talk about biology, digital biology, and we can go straight away into robotics and artificial intelligence and these things that sometimes can seem so separate from each other, and bring them right into the same space.
And they really seem to meet. It's so much fun for me. Whenever we started it, we didn't really have that as the explicit plan. We wanted to expose people to all of these different technologies, but we kind of went out and said, no, here are the experts in each field, and we'll get them to do their silo. And I think after we were all in the room together and listened to each other so many different times, we're like, hey, maybe that thing that you're doing is going to help me with this project. And, you know, it's amazing that all of the big advances we're doing today, right? And I mean as a civilization on this planet.
Yeah.
We've kind of exhausted some of the deep dives in different fields. And now to really do something interesting, you've got to say, well, okay, we need at least two or three different expertises. And so to do that correctly, you either have to have somebody who can just accumulate PhDs like baseball cards, or they're really good at working with a group of people and kind of being that glue or that translator. And I think that is sort of the key to getting through this next 20 or 30 years, you know?
Yeah. So I've got a little bit of a question. So one of the things I really enjoyed you talking about was this biohacking space that you've created and some of the very useful things coming out of that. And you showed examples of other sort of hacking spaces around the US. And I know... in South Africa, we've recently started sort of a hardware hacking, so your typical 3D printing and that sort of stuff. But the conference is really around future-proofing Africa. And a lot of these things, you know, take a significant amount of investment to get up and running. How does a space like Africa, who's in desperate need of a lot of these technologies, especially, you know, in your space, when you're talking about the medical advances and the benefits that can have in terms of, you know, simple things like longevity, when you have the average age in Africa is lower than most other parts of the world. How does that sort of thing become accessible? How do governments maybe or large organizations play a role? And have you seen stuff like that happening?
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. I think maybe the last 20 years of some of this technology, when we're on these exponential curves, the story is really about things that you used to need a government for, then you needed a large company, and then you needed a small company, and then you could do in your garage.
Yeah.
And so we found, like, BioCurious is a perfect example. Me and five other people, and we said, man, somebody needs to do this. And then finally we kind of got tired of waiting for somebody else to do it and said, let's just put all of the stuff in our garages together and let people use it and figure it out. We were amazed at how cheap it was. This was 2009, we did a Kickstarter project. And to give you an idea how early this was in Kickstarter, we were the most successful, most well-funded Kickstarter project ever at $36,000. And people were just like, wow. And that's all the start off funding.
And you got your backing.
Yeah. People loved it. People thought, this is just so crazy and radical. We'll give it a shot. But with that money, most of that went toward being able to have some real estate open up a space, a commercial space. All the equipment, which is the hard part about doing this thing. If you were a company and you were going to start it up, you'd have to quit your job, go fundraise, you know, capital equipment, millions of dollars, and then maybe your thing doesn't work, and so that was all for naught.
Yeah.
But we found we could do pretty well with really cheap equipment. We could make a lot of our own things, which was kind of what the DIY movement was doing at the time. We could go ahead and get, you know, like last generation last year, especially at schools where they get a grant and have to spend the money, and sometimes they have to spend it on equipment. They'll go ahead and kind of, this comes out the back door, you're fine. You know, we would rather you have it than it go over here. And then companies, especially because we had nonprofit status, would give us things that ordinarily they would have sold, and they're just like, it's a tax loss. So it was really nice. We were able to do it for pennies on the dollar, and all of those ways are great ways, I think, for individuals who are trying to scrounge and start a business or a process, something new, or organizations to do this.
You ended your talk today with we're in a scientific revolution. Viva the scientific revolution, with a great mismatch of Einstein and Che Guevara. But that's fantastic. And I'd like you just to expand on what that is for our listeners who weren't able to come and listen to your speech today, but specifically things around the genetic modification of things like mosquitoes and how we can actually use them as hypodermic needles that fly around. I mean, that's a wild, wild concept. And you shared some others. So please, if you will, share with us some of the great things that you think are happening today in this.
Sure, sure. Well, I think a lot of what is going on is you have people who are really deep in one subject are making the jump over to the other, this interdisciplinary thing. And so they look at it in a whole new way. And so something, instead of being a problem, you know, we're bringing a new tool across sort of a barrier to do something. They just bring fresh blood. And that's nice. But we're really seeing leaps where people before had crawled. And it's the tech getting cheap. It's the free accessibility of information. And really, there's this great DIY and open source piece. And sometimes that's in competition against, you know, good old-fashioned intellectual property, and you got to make some money to pay a mortgage. And that's okay. But people are giving away things that you can pick up, things free on the ground, both knowledge and equipment that ordinarily you would have had to just spend years trying to acquire. So one of the things we're looking at is, how can we get more people working on these harder subjects? And I always like the example of, it's easy to make an app. It's hard to cure cancer. So I worry that, you know, people will kind of go for the easy wins, and I'll be 102 and I'll have my iPad 27, but I won't be able to see the little Farmville game on it because I'll be drooling so much from, you know, some neurological thing. So we've got to come up with a way to do a little bit better job. And to me, that is putting more tools in more hands, having more people be familiar with this, especially from an early age. So that's kind of that implication. The other thing is, all of these technologies and the GNR, right?
Yeah.
Genetics, nanotechnology, robotics, which really so perfectly come together for biotech, are incredibly powerful. And so they do have a great upside and a horrifying downside. And part of, I think, how you look at that, you know, some people are like, oh, we need to regulate this and restrict that and not do these things and put a moratorium. And for me, that always just means the good guys stop working on it and the bad guys keep working on it. And that's not where you want to be. But if you go ahead and say, hey, there's some things we're going to get wrong, let's see how many things we can get right and how much knowledge we can build up and what we can do. And so I tell people, I say, if you're scared about a technology, your very best thing to do is get that technology in the hands of five-year-olds, of third graders.
Embrace it.
And just find out, you know, and I don't mean experiment on the kids so much, although you can, and that's pretty cheap, and it kind of depends on the regulatory environment. But to go ahead and
be curious.
And kids are such great scientists. Love to ask questions and try things and do it without any ego and without any worry.
Do you find that type of approach to it is very collaborative as well?
It's like, let's try this, let's try this. And sometimes, you know, there'll be some little natural leader or sometimes a bully and they do their own thing. But kids will get things done. And it's just amazing. And I think so much of our educational systems are a way to do mass babysitting, and we beat that creativity out of folks.
Absolutely.
Well, we've got a new thing that my wife and I are trying on our four-year-old, and it's to allow her to be bored. It's okay for them to be bored, because I remember when I was bored was the moments where I went into my imagination and you can come up with creative spaces. And I think too often we're throwing screen time and things at this. But you mentioned something as well with regards to people trying to genetically engineer, I suppose, our children, or in the future, we've got the haves and the have-nots, and the haves are in a position where they're able to say, well, I want my child to not have the genetic makeup that allows them to be have the propensity to get AIDS or cancer or any of the other bad things that we never want our children to have. Mm-hmm. And with that comes in this, Nick Kahn was talking about how exponential technology increases or amplifies the differences, and we need to have the design inclusion in the future. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on that? I mean, that's a big topic. We don't have a lot of time today, but...
Yeah. I mean, you know, for sure, we're going to have these technologies. They're going to be used. And we, as human beings, you know, we're both natural engineers and we love our kids. And so we, sometimes that comes together and we're going to engineer our kids. Yeah. But I think so many of these technologies, they... I really, truly believe they will be something expensive, inexpensive, and accessible to many people. But that's not how they're going to start.
Yeah.
And life extension, genetic engineering, some of the future neurological things, you know, just who can afford a tablet and a smartphone, or at least a nice one now, although that's spreading fairly quickly. So how do we information enable these technologies so that it's not some machine or a particular protected technique, but it's something you can spread out and repeat and do it fast. Mm. That for me is one thing. And just being aware that rich people are going to get it first, and do we want to live in a world like that? And rather than maybe wringing our hands about, oh, should we ever do this? It's like, well, let people do what they're going to do.
And let's learn.
Yeah. We'll do a lot of experiments.
The sooner we do it, the sooner we can actually drive that price down. That's just how commercials work. In the beginning with a new technology, it's so expensive to get it out there and commercialize it. Then initially, yes, it makes sense just because of pure economics that the rich people get to it. But I think with this sort of stuff, I certainly get the impression there's enough people working on it that it's going to be too difficult to control and limit to just the rich. It's going to get out there, right? I mean, you're already talking about some open source databases with, you know, genome sequences and that sort of stuff. It may not be complete, but they're out there.
Yeah.
And some more examples of that sort of thing tells me that we probably are heading towards a route where it's going to be available to the masses, just not from day one. Mm-hmm. And we'll get there over time.
I do think so. And it's been hard for me because, you know, I've got the soul of an engineer, and I tend to see things as black and white, and, you know, this is right and all the other solutions are wrong. This is one that's going to have, and always going to have, huge numbers of gray areas, and different individuals and different societies will approach this differently. And one of the things you kind of have to tell yourself is, that's okay.
Yeah.
And that's actually great. On a global scale, we're going to do a lot of experiments and see what works and what doesn't work. And there's one more thing kind of along those lines. You know, sometimes in the tech world, we joke that early adopters are, of course, stupid people with too much money. So, and that sounds
pretty good. And on the other side of it, stupid people with no money.
Yeah. Which is even worse.
Yeah.
For genetic engineering, the idea of being the early adopter, in some ways, it's nice to be the first one there. In other ways, you get the platform with all the bugs, which in human terms means you have a kid and maybe the upgrade didn't work as well as you hoped.
And that leg
is tragic. Yeah. Or, you know, or cancer. And not to be a downer about it, but there will be real risks to doing it
in the beginning, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Tell me, so again, you spoke about so many wonderful things and GMOs, and you spoke about GMO 3.0 as you see it now. And again, for the courtesy of our listeners that weren't there, you know, that intrigued me a lot because there's this big debate around GMO enhanced food and we shouldn't be eating it and it's actually causing more cancers and that sort of stuff. And you had a different view looking at GMO 3.0. Would you love to elaborate a bit on that?
Sure. And not originally my field, but now I do so much work with reading and writing DNA, and it just kind of naturally gravitated there. And I remember, you know, the debate and from the outside, like, oh, yeah, I ought to buy organic, I ought to do this. Whenever I started looking at it, it was like, oh, yeah, man, there's no there. Everybody's worried or complaining about it. To offend as many people as possible. We talk about GMOs, and the fear of GMOs is sort of the liberal version of climate change denial, you know, where people just are like, well, we don't trust the scientists on that, of course. But I think it's hard to say that there's any kind of problem there. About a trillion meals have been served to humanity over the last 50 years that have GMOs in them. Nobody's been able to draw any kind of a line or any kind of causal relationship or really any correlation that makes any sense. So now things could go wrong with GMOs. You could definitely have people do some bad things. But I think there's a lot of noise and fury in that debate that is detracting from some of the scary things that could really happen that we ought to be debating and watching for. But the great thing is now, because like all of these technologies, this is getting cheaper. You don't have to be a multi-billion dollar corporation to do this. Co-ops of farmers are now coming up with genetically engineered strains of cash crops that will grow in their climate, or, you know, brackish water or soil that
or require less water.
Exactly.
No, it's incredible that these types of things are not just in the future, the distant future. They're on our doorstep, and these are things that we can start to learn from today to make sure that we're in a better position later. You had a great quote, and it was your fourth law of engineering that you had inscribed on one of your cool kits. I think it was a chemistry lab?
It was a little synthetic biology lab in a box. You could actually modify a microbe and make it grow anything you want to.
Fantastic. And the fourth law of engineering was?
If you don't know how to build it, you don't understand it.
And that is fantastic. I think that's something to inspired by the five-year-olds and all that as well. Like, give it to them. Let's understand what this is.
Exactly.
And I think so many people, I mean, I've used this quote a few times. It's that quote from Jurassic Park, which is, we spent so much time trying to find out if we could. We didn't stop to think whether or not we should. And it's this great idea that with understanding, we can actually start to build great things. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
And I think that's a nice note to finish off on. Something I've really been intrigued by today, and just about everyone we've spoken to, is this notion of embracing all of this stuff as opposed to
fearing
trying
it,
to control it and fear it. And it's almost like the inevitability of it is there. It's going to happen. So embrace it and rather learn from it than trying to control it. And I think that's fantastic. And I think that's the opportunity for future-proofing Africa. Is get the Africans. I mean, we've, as has been alluded to, we can leapfrog so many of the lessons learned by the sort of first world countries by just embracing this stuff.
Such great opportunities for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Raymond Wakoli, for your time. I look forward to the opportunity and privilege to have you back on the Futurology Show.
I would love that.
Yeah. Excellent. And see you around Singularity.
See you around.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Keep well. Bye.
Okay, so that's it. This is the new way to date. I'm convinced. I'm going to go get my DNA sampler right now, guys.
No, you're not. Yes, no, you're not.
I've put an order. Wait, listen to this. That's me ordering.
Throwing your ethics out the window. Does your wife know about this? Eh? I suppose it's a
I've
bit late.
I've just DNA checked her, and we've decided...
she's not human.
She's not human. Anyone married to me is not human.
Clearly not, eh?
But it's a big task, eh?
It's a big task.
I mean, they're only looking at big global challenges, these guys.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, it's as crazy as it seems to us. I mean, we're not thinking on this level day to day.
No,
we're
not. It does kind of make me think that
we
is there
be.
A way that we could expand it? You know, do we spend ourselves wasting away in a bar?
Well, you know,
are we not really dealing with big issues? Because these guys talk about these big issues all day long.
But the point here is, you know, I mean, Peter Diamandis keeps talking about it. You know, it's the understanding that we do live in an abundant world. You know, the scarcity is just a framework of our economic model. But also, if you want to earn $1 billion, find a problem a billion people have.
Yes.
And that's why they're focusing on these great global challenges, these grand challenges, because they're saying, well, how do we fix these problems? So they're looking at this from a simple, realistic business model. So if you're simply looking at the saying, I want to find my 1,000 true fans versus the next billion problem to solve, you know, change your thinking and you'll change the results. Not hard.
No.
There's so many problems that a billion people have, right?
Exactly.
My mind's just racing. You can see why the guys are doing malaria, diabetes.
Yeah.
And when you look at Africa,
warming,
when you look at Africa, we have a billion people.
Yeah.
And if you just solve
the billion
all
problems.
Our problems.
Well,
yeah, exactly.
Well, just find million people. We don't need one person to find the billion people solution. We just need people to focus on the million things.
Yeah.
Like focus on big impact
solutions.
Remember
rather
Ray,
than how many fans I have on Facebook.
Remember Ray came in and they're solving one African problem. I mean, I love that. There's some local guys really addressing that one big problem. Now, we need a whole lot of us thinking like that.
No, we do.
I doubt these big thinkers are trying to solve African problems.
The wonderful thing about Africa is that, I mean, we look at it and everybody's talking about this, the new industrial revolution, and how is Africa going to catch up? Well, they don't need to, because
we can leapfrog.
And the biggest reason why we have to leapfrog, actually, is because the lack of infrastructure throughout the African continent to access the people with the need means that technology needs to be things like drones that deliver blood parcels into the middle of nowhere, and that you are able to do things. And it's really fun to see not only the exponential disruptive technology coming in, but these leapfrog technologies that are answering needs.
So, well, guys, I think this is important. They've got tickets on sale. They've already launched the next set of early birds.
Yep.
They've done the early-earlies. The early birds are now live. How much did you say they were, Brett?
I'm checking it out now. But if you go to the SingularityUSouthAfricaSummit.org website, you can have faster internet than I have
right now. I was about to say, it did sound like you were buying time, www.IWillBuyMoreTime.
It's
my
better
name
than
is
trying
Brett
to add a hashtag. You
know, actually, while we're there, please download our podcast when you're there.
Yep.
Give us 5 stars, like, subscribe, do the works. Our Twitter handle's at Futurology Show. Please share the show. I mean, the Singularity series is phenomenal. For all of you guys who were not able to make it, trust me, you want to make it next year and you want to book your tickets now.
100%.
Awesome. So, early bird tickets on sale for $13,750.
Guys, that's nothing.
It's well worth it.
It's well worth it. You put it in dollars terms, you're not going to go to a show overseas in the United States for less than $2,500, guys.
Yeah.
So they're not actually, just a correction, they're not actually on sale now. They'll be on sale early 2018, but that'll be the early bird price. So make sure you get that early bird price.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Awesome. Cool. So, until the next episode of Futurology.
Yes, absolutely.
And we have more Singularity to get through.
We do. Fantastic.
So if you've enjoyed the show, we've got more for you coming soon. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cliffcentral.com.